101, a version 1 podcast.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the 101 podcast, conversations with the UK and Ireland's top IT and digital leaders. My name is Suraj Shah, and today I'm joined by Ed Garces, who is the Director of Transformation at Central Bedfordshire Council. Ed, it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for welcoming me, Suraj. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, today we'll be focusing on the transformation program at the council over the last 9 months or so, and looking at the tools, people and processes that have been involved in the initiative. And we'll also look at some of the challenges and quite importantly, the impact on citizens. So, Ed, to begin with, maybe you want to give us a lowdown on, you know, what your role is and what the council actually does.
Sure. So I joined Central Bedfordshire in June, which was partway through the response to the pandemic, as you know. And my role when I first applied, when it was first created, was very much about supporting the council in moving from being a new council, just under 12 years old, into the next stage of its evolution, the journey from good to great, if you like. As we've all since experienced, by the time I actually started, we'd moved into full pandemic mode and pandemic response mode, which for councils was essentially dealing with a real crisis. Councils deliver a very, very wide range of services, and Central Beds is no different to that. We serve about 300,000 people and deliver a range of services from social care to leisure to refuse collection, etc. Our challenge through this period has really been around how we continue to deliver those services to the usual standard or even better, as people need many of them more than they usually would, but also how we support our staff and some of our most vulnerable citizens in what's an unprecedented time of difficulty and financial constraint for many, many people.
In terms of how you've gone about that, was there a kind of strategy in place before you were there, or is this something that you've put together yourself?
So it's been a bit of a mixed bag. I think like many local authorities, Central Beds was actually really well placed. We've been using remote working tools and supporting colleagues in working remotely for some time. Central Beds is quite lucky, being as young as it is. There's less of a legacy infrastructure than perhaps many other councils would have. However, it has been hard, I think, for staff to not be coming to the office all the time, to not be seeing their customers face-to-face on a regular basis. When things started in March, the organization had a bit of a technology challenge, largely in terms of getting people the kit they needed where they were. So the infrastructure was all there. The council was already using tools to support remote working, had a culture of remote working. However, many people didn't have suitable desk space or chairs or screens to support extended periods of working at home. So there was a bit of a challenge around getting that technology to people at home and then dealing with some staff who didn't have circumstances at home that were conducive to working remotely. And so we had to find a way of getting that balance right. And by the time I joined in June, things had started to settle. We were starting to come to a place where, you know, an end to lockdown 1.0 was becoming obvious, and we were preparing to re-normalize. But as we did that, we realized that a lot of our staff, and we'd engaged with our staff quite comprehensively through the process, we started to realize that for our staff, there were many benefits that had been derived during this period of working differently. And so what we started to look at was how we could build on some of the successes from remote working and really improve things for those staff so that they could continue to derive those benefits, but at the same time, look at how we could adjust our services to make sure that they were continuing to meet customer needs. And so one of the very first things that I did when I started was to look at how we could support staff to connect and collaborate, which was the big gap they'd had, and how we could set about establishing a new normal for how we use the office and how we come together.
Was that kind of taken on board by staff? Was it something that they all embraced?
Also, it's interesting. Like, you know, I have to keep reminding myself, it was never the case that everyone loved coming into the office in the olden days, so to speak. And it continues to be the case that working remotely is not something that everyone loves. And so having done a couple of pulse surveys where we did relatively short, sharp surveys across the workforce to better understand how they were feeling, what was working for them and what wasn't, we started running a couple of focus groups where we brought staff together in mixed groups or in specific groups of, you know, staff who were single, staff who were single parents, that kind of thing, to talk about how they had been impacted by these new ways of working. In doing all of that, what we learned was that the impact has been essentially unique for everyone, and there isn't any right answer in how we move forwards. But it is very clear that most people, the very, very large majority of people, want to benefit from some of the changes that we've seen. And so through those discussions, through those focus groups, we've learned about the stuff that matters to most people, and we've started to look to implement that. So a lot of people want to be able to work more flexibly and get the balance between their lives and their work more in equilibrium. A lot of people are really keen to be able to come into the office to connect with colleagues socially. We all forget the social side of work, but also to collaborate on bigger problems or problems that need the input from more than one team. And so we've started to pilot some different approaches of how we might achieve those things. We did some stuff fairly early in the summer around remote social activities, virtual cuppers, evening meals with some groups of staff, just as ways of establishing and maintaining relationships. And currently we're reconfiguring a large part of our main office to support COVID secure connection and collaboration, a place where colleagues can come together as soon as it's safe to do so and meet with each other, chat, have those cups of tea, but also where they can come together and work on specific problems. In parallel with that, we've also honored the requirement for some of our staff to have dedicated working desk space. And we know that it's somewhere between about 5 and 10% of our staff on any day who want to be able to work outside of the home. And so we've been looking at opportunities to support that in our offices, both the head office, but also some of our hubs and satellites. But we've also been talking about that with some of our partners and how we might use office space more flexibly for staff across our organizations.
Yeah, it's really interesting. A lot of the challenges you kind of mentioned there are, or the changes I should say, are not just around technology. There's a lot of cultural and personal differences between each staff member. So, but in terms of the technology itself, is there anything that you've had to do differently or that you've had to implement during this time?
I think from a tech perspective, some of the key bits of technology that we've relied on or used are video conferencing, enabling people to meet each other remotely. But as I said before, a lot of that's already been in place for staff. So what we've seen is a shift to more rather than the introduction of new. Where I think we have seen the introduction of new and where I think we've seen some really interesting developments has been in how we engage with our communities and how our democratic processes work. So like many councils, we've had online services, you know, for many, many years. And like many councils, when lockdown kicked in and the pandemic struck, we were left having to deliver those services virtually and in some cases not being able to offer a face-to-face service. And we've actually found that a lot of our communities, a lot of our residents have actually embraced that. And we've started to do click and collect, for example, in our libraries and different ways of accessing services that seems to be a win-win. The one that I think has been really interesting is the democratic process, where whether it's a scrutiny committee or a council meeting, we've had to run those remotely. And for anyone who follows local government, they tend to be quite traditional meetings, and they've tended to operate in either the council chamber or a relatively formal setting where the politicians engage in debate or discuss particular items and members of the public can attend and watch. With the remote meetings, what we've seen is a couple of interesting developments. So we've seen more members of the public join in and take part, witness those democratic meetings. But we've also seen a change in the way that people engage with the meeting. So rather than arriving at the beginning and watching a meeting all the way through, people are now much more able to join a meeting for a particular agenda item that's of interest, to watch the discussion or maybe make representations during it, and then to leave. So I think there is a learning for us that some of these challenges have actually created a more transparent democracy, if you like. They've invited and made the process more accessible to more of the people we serve.
That's really interesting. And do you, you know, in terms of how going forward, when things do get to some, you know, back to some sort of normality, where do you see this going? Are you going to do a mix of virtual and in-person events like that?
A really good question. So I guess there's, we talk about the face-to-face, we talk about the remote, and increasingly I hear people talk about hybrid. And I guess for us, as we look across those three kind of dimensions, the communities and people we serve, the democracy and the democratic process, and our employees, there are probably slightly different answers for each. So turning initially to our employees, we very much think that some form of hybrid way of working is very likely in the future. And we think, whereas previously, we've always had people working from home, but it was the most people in the office, a smaller percentage of people at home, we think that might flip. So we might see more people at home, fewer in the office. And so that hybrid meetings will need to be slicker, will need to work better to ensure that everyone can come together and work effectively. And that's one of those things we're testing and piloting through our Connect and Collaborate spaces. In terms of the democratic process, it's a difficult one because it doesn't fall directly within our control. It's governed by statute and legislation. And so we will obviously need to comply with that. But I think there have been a lot of learnings across the sector. And I very much look forward to that time when we can talk about how different things are and how different they've been and better understand how we can continue to make, you know, the democratic processes that impact on the people we serve as transparent and accessible as possible for them. When it comes to our communities, I think that's probably the bit where it's most interesting, because one of the things we've learned is that we work in partnership with a whole load of other organizations when it comes to our communities. It's not just the council. It's not just the health system. It's not just the voluntary and community services. There's an entire ecosystem that operates in any community that helps those communities to thrive and survive in the best of times and in the most challenging of times. And I think one of the things that we will see, and certainly one of the things that has borne out so far, is a changed emphasis around how councils and communities and voluntary and community services work together to create the best possible outcomes for the people we serve. So I anticipate a little bit of change in each, but not necessarily the same change in each of those three dimensions.
And when you say that, do you mean, are you talking about the way services are delivered? Are you talking about digital services?
A bit about each. So in terms of communities, it can be about digital services. It can be about the way in which we support people to contact us, to make representations, to request, some of the more mundane service requests, like requesting bulky refuse or whatever else. But I think also about how if we ignore the individual services and we talk about the needs that people have, if our communities have a particular need, I think we can start to change the way we go about better understanding that and understanding how we can meet it. So it's more about, I guess, partnership working. In terms of the democracy, I think there is a degree to which that's about the tools and the technologies that support both the democratic processes, but also engagement with those. And when it comes to the employee end, I think it's a little bit of culture, it's a little bit of technology, and it's a little bit of facility and space and how those things come together. And I think we've always historically spoken about people, processes, and technology. I think there is a fourth dimension that we need to think about now, which is space. Because we'd always assumed that the people, the processes, and the technology worked in the office, whereas now we need to accept that they work in different places, the office, at home, Costa Coffee, wherever.
And does that change, you know, that element of space, does that then change the tools, technologies, processes that you use? And have you seen that happen? Obviously, you mentioned video conferencing. That's one of the key ones that all IT leaders are using now, and all staff are using now a lot more. But is there anything else that's happening that is perhaps that goes under the radar a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing more people using, I mean, so at a very simple level, I think we're seeing more people use more devices in different ways. I think we're seeing a greater need to use some of the collaboration features built into, whether it's the Google or the Microsoft productivity suites, so that people can edit documents at the same time and comment on each other's edits, etc. I think we're also seeing a need for that ever-increasing cyber awareness and consciousness about, you know, getting the balance right between sharing, collaborating, working in the open, but also keeping secure, particularly when it comes to the records and the information that our residents and customers trust us with. So I think there are tools that support ways of working, whether that be, you know, the video conferencing, that kind of stuff. There are tools that will support connecting, sharing data, keeping data safe, that kind of thing. And there are devices that will enable people to work more effectively in different locations.
For a council, are there any differences or in terms of the challenges that you face with this kind of transformation, with this whole move to remote working, and even kind of going beyond that, and what we're likely to see in the next year? Are there any challenges that are different to the private sector?
I mean, I think that's a really good question. I think in my view, the challenges that we face in the public sector are greater than those in the private sector oftentimes, and particularly when it comes to working differently and being able to continue to deliver during the pandemic. One of the challenges that we face is, as an organization, we tend to deliver 300 or 400 different service lines, and many of those require physical presence. So, you know, you can't collect someone's rubbish unless you go to their house to collect the rubbish. You can't deliver an in-school class without attending a school. So I think there is a difference for us in that, A, we have a massive range of services, and they need different things, and we need to support them in different ways. But B, we also deliver services that require face-to-face contact or that require physical presence. And so I think we've had to balance quite a hybrid way of working, with some of our services continuing to operate out of offices, and some of our services being able to much more readily shift to being remote. I think most of the public sector organizations, and inevitably there are some exceptions, but most of the private sector organizations I'm aware of have been in either one of those two camps rather than both. And so we've had to kind of balance that challenge. I think the other challenge for the public sector has been how we support essentially some very, very vulnerable people during a very difficult time. And so, unlike an organization that's selling services or delivering products, yes, we provide services. Yes, we deliver services to people. We've also had to take on the mantle to deliver additional support to communities in this time of need. And we've had to do that on top of the day job, on top of keeping all of the other services busy and working. So I think it's been a very busy time for us.
Yeah, so is the impact on citizens something that you have to take into account with every decision that you make?
Yeah, I mean, I think the for us, the real challenge is we need to consider the needs of our citizens in terms of the regular services we offer. And we offer a range of services, from kind of universal services that everyone receives, and then some specialist services for folk that have specific or different needs. As we've had to respond to the pandemic, we've needed to make some choices about how we best service those needs. And then as we've supported our staff through what's also, you know, equally been a difficult time for them, we've had to make sure that we're doing that in a way that is sympathetic to our responsibilities and the services that we deliver to others. So I guess the shortest answer is, yes, we have to put our customers, our residents at the heart of everything we do. And in the here and now, I think that means being minded to how we keep them safe, how we keep them fed if they don't have food, and how we make sure that we can continue to deliver services to them, even as we ourselves need to respond to the pandemic and the challenges it brings.
And in terms of the transformation program, is there anything else that you've been working on, or any other projects that you think are quite interesting?
We're at a really interesting point, I think, as a sector and as an organization, where as we look at how we evolve, as we look at how local services evolve, the biggest change that I think I can see and that has emerged from some of the work that we've done through the pandemic is about how we work in partnership more. And I don't necessarily mean one council partnering with another. I mean, it's that reflecting from a community perspective. So if we see ourselves not as the council simply serving a place, but rather as a convener, we bring together different people within a community. We understand strengths across a community. We understand needs across a community, and we help to bring some of those strengths together with some of those needs to make things better for people. And an example I can give you is we've just agreed the new vision for Central Bedfordshire. And it's not a vision that the council has set out. It's a vision that's come from employers, businesses, citizens, residents, customers across Central Bedfordshire about the things that matter to us in Central Beds. And by creating that shared aspiration, those shared outcomes, those shared objectives that we want to achieve, we've also made a commitment to work together to achieve them as shared endeavor. And that, to me, feels like a really important challenge in terms of achieving more with less, doing things really, really differently, and having a fundamentally different relationship between the council and the communities that it serves.
Okay, brilliant. And finally, I just wanted to kind of get your idea on what the plan will be for the council going forward. I mean, you touched on a few things throughout the conversation, but is there anything in particular that you're looking to work on in the coming months?
I mean, there are. It's we have a very, very ambitious plan around some of the changes that we'll make, some of the things that we'll do differently. I guess one of the big challenges for us is how we align that with the changes that we know are happening nationally and globally. So there is a timing thing that I think could be difficult and challenging. But we're really looking at the way that we work, as I mentioned before, and how we do stuff differently as an organization. So making better use of the space that we have, enabling our workforce to be more flexible, get life-work balance right, and through that to hopefully deliver better services to the people we serve. We're looking to really pick up on some of the digital vulnerability that we've seen through the pandemic. So we know that there are many, many people who've used technology in ways that they hadn't before the pandemic started. But we also know that there are some people who've been unable to use technology. And one of our observations has been previously we had a program to put services online as an additional channel, additional choice, if you like. we now know that for many people, if they weren't able to go online, they weren't able to do their shopping, they weren't able to connect with their grandkids or their kids over video chat. And so we see that kind of digital poverty, if you like, as a real challenge for us to support and to work on to try and eliminate within our communities, not because it necessarily changes the relationship the council has with people, but actually because it empowers people to live more independent lives, to live better lives. And so there will be a big focus for us as we come out of the pandemic, but actually starting now, around how we both enable people to use tech, give them the connectivity they need, but also give them the support and the training to enable them to do some of those basic things that many of us already take for granted. With that, I guess we also see this change in the way our accommodation and our buildings work, so that we create a smaller local presence for the council across central Bedfordshire for those people who do need to come face-to-face, because that need will never stop. But perhaps for it to be reduced to where it adds value, where it's actually needed, and the rest of the time to be engaging with people in a more digital, more online way.
Brilliant. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Ed. It's a great transformation project, and it's been really interesting to hear about the impact on both staff and citizens. So thanks so much for your time today, and good luck with everything going forward.
It's been really great speaking, Suraj. Thanks and take care.
That's it from us. I've been your host, Suraj Jah. For more episodes of the 101 podcast, please visit version1.com/1-0-1.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.